Sprint cars, super late models, thunder cars, modifieds, World of Outlaws, Arcas, it's all here. Welcome to Race Time Radio. Covering dirt to asphalt. On races, fame, short tracks. All the way to the high banked oval. This is Race Time Radio.
Come on now, dig.
And now, here's your host, live from the Race Time Radio studio, it's Smokin' Joe Chisholm.
Excellent, buddy, excellent.
Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to Race Time Radio. It's not that the wind is a-blowing. It's more like what the wind is blowing. Man, I'll tell you, we have got gale force winds outside the Race Time Radio studio. So I want to let you know right off the top, fingers crossed that the power stays exactly where it is right now and coming down the line, because I'll tell you what, it is blustery outside, but we're going to get through this. The wind's going to stop blowing, and we're going to talk some racing right here on Race Time Radio. I'm Joe Chisholm, along with Joe Chisholm Jr., right here in the RTR studio. What's going on, kid?
You know what I think it was? The spoilers are a lot bigger down in Atlanta this weekend, and the vortex effect basically, you know, causes a little bit of blustery conditions up here. We're not going to experience it too much next weekend when they go to Vegas, because it's too far away from here.
Right.
You know, it's straight north from here to Atlanta, so, or straight south from here, but we're straight north of there. So, you know, that, I think that's what it's, that's what the windstorm is from.
You think?
Yeah, because it started when practice basically got started yesterday, right? So that's when it was. Next week when they go to Vegas, so everybody in Edmonton and you know, that little corridor there, Edmonton, Calgary, you guys are probably going to get some significant wind as well.
Yeah, no kidding. Man, it's it was good to see the wind blew that crap out of Atlanta yesterday. Kind of a tough day for those guys. Both series ran yesterday. The new Gander Outdoor Truck Series ran, and of course the Xfinity Series, both at Atlanta Motor Speedway, and kind of a drizzly, misty kind of day, but they got through it.
I remember a Cat 250 at Scotia Speed World, where we couldn't see. I was calling on the back stretch, and I couldn't see the front stretch.
Yeah,
I could only imagine what the spotters were going through yesterday up on the roof calling the Xfinity race, mainly the Xfinity race, and then towards the end of the truck race. But definitely a lot of fog, a lot of mist, you know, a lot of damp conditions. But to be honest with you, if I hadn't seen the race at Scotia Speed World that one time in the fog, you know, the way that they raced, there was literal raindrops everywhere. Everything was wet. I couldn't figure out how the track was dry, you know, but in this case here, if I hadn't seen, you know, what we've seen at Scotia that night, I wouldn't believe that NASCAR would have tried to pull that off.
And
to be honest with you, 2 years ago, I don't think they would have tried to pull that off.
Right.
I think that would have just been a washout day. Don't you?
Yeah, I do.
It's a different time now with TV and, you know, the way that everything is structured. There's a real emphasis on getting stuff done. And, you know, even practice yesterday for the Cup guys, you know, they were out there practicing, and there was literal raindrops on the camera lens.
Yeah, it was kind of weird, wasn't it? Like, some of the camera angles, they looked really, really bad.
Yeah.
And, you know, they switched to the next camera angle, and it didn't look too bad.
Yeah, it's you know, there's got to be something in there with the exposure. It's like that one time at Talladega where it was too dark to finish, but on the camera it looked
fine.
It looked perfect. It looked like it was just dusk, you know?
Yeah, you're right.
You know, just how they open up the exposure and the camera, it seems like the cameras that were shooting across the back straightaway from the front stretch were fine.
Yeah.
But the close-up cameras, you could really see it. But definitely a beautiful day in Atlanta today for the Cup guys for the 500. You know, a decent race. I think we called it pretty good last week and said, don't get your hopes up.
Right.
You know, I think the new package, you're not going to see, you know, it come to really, you know, come to fruit or come to bear.
Right.
Until you get to a smooth track like Vegas or an open track like California. I think that's where you're going to see that new package come to life in a different manner.
Right.
I think that it proved itself today in Atlanta that it was better.
Mm-hmm.
That Atlanta race was pretty good.
It was.
You know, towards the end of the race, they're three wide, you know, four wide for, you know, they would do that last year. They would do that the year prior for like two laps after a restart.
Right.
They were like that for a solid 10 laps. Then they strung out a bit.
Yeah.
You know, it's bound to happen. The tires are falling off really fast at Atlanta.
Yeah.
Tearing the tires off the things. So, really, the race itself, for me, was entertaining. I watched the whole race, and, you know, it's still a long drawn-out show, but I think it's a step in the right direction. And to be honest with you, after seeing what we've seen today from Atlanta, I think that you're going to really, really like what you're going to see at Vegas.
Yeah.
And really, I'm not saying anything that nobody else isn't saying. The entire industry is echoing that Vegas is the place where
you're
going to see the difference.
And the guys tested there, right?
Preseason
exactly. Thunder, they did. Yep. So they do have some track time. At least 21 or 22 teams do.
Yep.
Not everybody. But some of those guys have got a little bit of track time.
Definitely.
At Vegas just before Daytona. That's going to make for a different looking race. It's going to be cool.
It will be. I think they're going to be bunched up for a long time. I think that they're bringing a different tire, by the sounds of it, to Vegas. So
mm-hmm.
There's going to be, you know, a little bit of the same where there's comers and goers. But I think it's going to hold up a little better. And I honestly am excited for next week.
Yeah.
I wish they would have went from Daytona to Vegas because that would have been,
yeah.
you know, epic. But not that today wasn't a good race. Atlanta is what it is. You know, I would give it a solid 6 out of 10.
Right.
You know, it wasn't a great race, but not every race can be great.
And tell me, the guys have been doing a good job too. When we look at the California race over the last few years, it's turned into one of those races that you do not want to miss.
Yeah, definitely. And a big portion of that is definitely, you know, the package that we had wasn't really conducive for a track like California, but
right.
the surface there, you know, there's big swells down the backstretch. The corners are bumpy as hell, and the track surface is going away, you know, is deteriorating.
Sounds like Atlanta.
Sounds like exactly like Atlanta.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, it is a place where we've seen a good race materialize from bad things happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there was a lot of tire failures. The last couple of years there has been.
Right.
A lot of tire failures, obviously a lot of suspension damage and splitters getting worn off and things like that. It seems like every single year where you go to California, really everything happens there and nothing happens at Michigan, which are two tracks that are very similar.
Yeah,
right?
Real similar.
But when you look at Michigan, it's paved and, you know, it's just a single lane or it's a freshly paved track compared to California.
Right.
And really you don't have the character in the track. So they just get strung out and single groove racing, dirty air comes into play. And one thing I didn't like about the Atlanta package, Martin Truex climbs out of the car today and he looked right into the camera and said the dirty air was just atrocious behind the two car.
Yeah.
And that is something that this package is trying to get away from. I was surprised that was
his comments.
His
yeah.
comment. It wasn't a detrimental comment. It
no,
wasn't like
no,
the
no.
COT where Kyle Busch got out of the car and said these things suck.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that little comment will go a long way to a lot of people because
right.
really, dirty air is the whole reason for this, is the reason to get away from this package.
This is the first race with the package, though, today.
Yes.
Daytona wasn't, right? Daytona
no,
was
no,
last
absolutely
year.
Not.
So
yes.
Today was the first day with that new package.
Yep.
It's going to be exciting moving forward. You can guarantee it.
I think it was a step in the right direction.
Brad Keselowski loves it. I can guarantee it.
He does.
He had a good day in the two car. Good for him. He's got a win now. And it's going to be interesting. I want to let you know we will hear from Kyle Busch a little bit later. We got some clips from the media center yesterday after the win. We'll also hear from Christopher Bell, the Xfinity winner. Pretty cool for Kyle Busch. 52 truck wins now, and he sets a new record, sets a new bar. Kind of cool for Kyle.
Yeah, it took, and I imagine they'll say it in this clip coming up, but it was 146 races that it took him to win 52.
Right.
It took Ron Hornaday over 350 races to get to that number, or to get to 51. Right.
So
that number is definitely staggering. Something like 35%, 33.5% of the races that he entered, he won. Kyle Busch.
Isn't that wild? Says a lot about the boys.
It says a lot about the equipment. It says a lot about him as well, though, because 16 of those came from a relatively small team, Billy Ballou. Obviously, they had good equipment still to winning caliber equipment. The equipment that he strapped into yesterday was a rocket ship compared to the first 16 to 20 wins that he had. And really, KBM, when they first started, they were not a powerhouse.
No. No, no.
They had good equipment.
They had
good people. They had to work their way in. Really, they became a powerhouse over the last 4 years. But really, you know, good on Kyle Busch. That's a massive number. And I think that, you know, on race day today, they talked about the fact that Kyle Busch is going to reach 200 wins across the top three national series this season.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's a very possible chance that he's going to hit that in 2019, which I fully agree with the comments echoed by them. We have to applaud that.
You got
it. It's incredible. And regardless of how many of them are truck wins versus cup, I don't care about that number. It's just like Jimmy Johnson winning 7 championships. You know, it's a big number and definitely needs to be celebrated.
Yeah, it sure does. Let me tell you.
Even though he has me blocked on Twitter,
yeah.
Which I have no idea why. Kyle, anybody listening out there, Kyle Busch has me blocked on Twitter. I've never said a bad thing. I'm honestly like a super fan. The guy is awesome, but he has me blocked on Twitter. I'm sorry for interrupting, but that is, I just thought of that. Here I am propping the guy, and I'm blocked.
And you're blocked on Twitter.
What
Kyle,
the hell is that?
Kyle, lighten up a bit. Let Junior back in. Anyway, we're going to hear from Kyle a little bit later. We'll hear from Christopher Bell. A couple of clips, actually, with Kyle Busch. In the one clip, he talks about the speed that the truck had yesterday at Atlanta. I think you'll find it very interesting. Very, very interesting. Let me tell you who we got on the show tonight. Man, we got a stellar lineup tonight. In just mere moments, we're going to catch up with, how about Kenny Wallace? He's coming back to Canada a number of times in the summer of 2019. But for sure, he's going to be back to defend his IWK 250 win that happened just last July. Kenny Wallace is coming back to Riverside International Speedway to celebrate 50 years of speed out there on the high banks. Kenny Wallace is coming back for the IWK 250 on the July 20th weekend, and he's coming on Racetime Radio tonight. We'll talk to Kenny about his return, what his thoughts are coming back, and we're going to find out. I believe he was behind the wheel of his dirt car just last night. What, did it rain?
It washed out.
Okay.
But we will also have to throw a couple jabs in there. He forgot all his driving gear.
Did he?
Yeah, he forgot all his driving gear.
Well,
he got hooked up, though. But
we'll catch up with Kenny here shortly. Cool. I also want to let you know we've got Anthony Leak coming on this program. Any listeners of Racetime Radio for a long time will maybe remember Anthony's name. He was with Emo Speedway out in Fort Frances, Ontario, dirt track out there, a track that Steve Arpin came from. Well, Anthony Leak is now with a new racetrack that's firing up this year. I believe they did get a couple of races in last year, but they are going to go full tilt this year in Kenora, Ontario, which is right along that Ontario-Manitoba border. Anthony Leak is going to talk about that very speedway here tonight. I was back and forth with Carl Mulder, and he was telling me all about the new Kenora Speedway, and that Anthony Leak, and I knew the name, and man, I can't tell you how excited I am to speak to Anthony tonight and find out more about the new Kenora Speedway. We're going to do that. We'll also talk Motorama. It's coming up in Toronto, March 8th, 9th, 10th, and that's coming up at the International Center right by the airport in Toronto. And we have got Greg McPherson coming on here from Inside Track Motorsport News and, of course, the promoter for Motorama. So we got a busy night all lined up. We're going to have time to take your calls, and we look forward to doing all of that. So what do you say we get things started? And let's welcome in, how about Kenny Wallace, man, oh, man, great news. Kenny, how you doing, buddy?
I am doing really good. Just got done racing two nights down in Stephensville, Texas, right outside of Dallas, and just flew into St. Louis, my home, and now I'm in the race shop working on my dirt car.
Now imagine that. Kenny, how did you make out on the weekend then?
You know what? We did good. I guess they had like 65 cars down there, and the first night we ran second in our heat and finished, started sixth in the AMA, finished 10th. Then the next, the second night, we didn't do very good in the heat, slid off the track. You know those stock cars?
Yeah.
IMCA stock cars, they get the beating, the banging, and the rooting a little bit. So they're a lot of fun. And I had to go through the B main. We started ninth in the B main. They took the top three. We finished third and made the A main. And then I started like 20th out of 22 cars. And on the first lap, man, they had a... Something happened to somebody about halfway through the field, and I got hit in the rear and shoved into the car in front of me, and it took the radiator and put it back into the fan. And so the night was over. But, hey, I got to tell you, I'm marking off all these different cars I'm driving, and I'm having the time of my life.
Kenny, that's super news. Man, you're going to go at it full tilt this year. You hung up the microphone and the TV camera. Not back on Fox. And I know we're all sad that Kenny Wallace isn't part of our Sunday entertainment package anymore. But it is good news for race fans that get a chance to make it out to their speedway. And, my God, they may even catch up with the Herminator himself. That's cool.
Well, you know, it's a long story, but I'll just try to condense it real quick. I started racing at 22 years old, so I was a late bloomer. As everybody knows, before I started racing, I was a mechanic fabricator, and I was a cup crew chief in 1984 for the Levi Garrett car, and Joe Rutman was driving it.
Hmm.
So I didn't even get in a race car until I was 22. Went right into the ASA series, the great ASA series. Then I went directly to the Xfinity Series, then the Cup Series in NASCAR. So I guess you could say I missed out on a lot of local racing. You know, what is it like to run a quick 20-lap feature? So I just decided that, you know, I was tired of doing TV. I did it for 15 years. Listen, TV was wonderful to me, and my bosses are great to me. The president of Fox Sports, which was Eric Shanks. And then I dealt with Steve Craddock, who was in charge of Fox NASCAR down in Charlotte. I told him, I said, hey, listen, y'all are good to me, but I want to go back racing. And they understood, and here I am. I'm 55 years old, the perfect age to fulfill my dream, and I'm kind of doing it backwards. I want to run hobby cars. I want to run super late models. I just want to race. And then, of course, I got my very own team, and that car is the car that I'll put a lot of attention to. But so that's really the story.
Kenny, you are the real deal. I can attest to it. I know fans that have come out to the short tracks and watched you behind the wheel, not only in the NASCAR days, but when you get to a short track and you hear that, oh, we've got a NASCAR star coming in. It's usually good news. You can depend on maybe getting an autograph, and you're going to be watching that NASCAR star go up against the local heroes, or, you know, in this case, the IWK 250 on the east coast of Canada at Riverside International Speedway. You go up against some real tough customers in super late model racing, and, you know, fans sometimes expect the best they're going to get is an autograph. But when Kenny Wallace shows up, I can guarantee you, seen it from my own eyes, Kenny, you get behind that wheel, and you want to go out and win that race. And, man, do you put a show on in the process.
Yeah, so I guess because I had an okay cup career, right, an Xfinity career. So we won nine Xfinity races, but we only finished second in the Cup Series three times. I never won a Cup race. So it would be a fair statement, you know, for someone to say, how much talent does Kenny Wallace really have? That's fair. But I always knew that I was loaded with talent because when I got in Steve Park's car, the Pennzoil car, you know, I set quick time at Rockingham and finished second in the Cup race. And then when Ernie Irvin got hurt, I got in that Texaco Haviland car and qualified front row outside at Atlanta. And then, of course, we all know, you know, what I can do at Daytona, Talladega. And then my best tracks, you know, are Martinsville and you know, Bristol. So I think when I come to a racetrack, people are like, oh, well, maybe, this guy's not that talented. But then when I win or I run good, it confuses a lot of people. They're like, oh, damn, he's a good runner. So that's really my case. I am a confusing study because I do run good everywhere all the time. It's all good.
Yeah, and you're a diversified driver, too. When you look at it, you're going from dirt, and you do dirt real good. Then you get into asphalt. You get into a super late model or a late model. Hell, I've even seen you in a pro stock car here in Ontario, a street stock that's souped up, and you've done a great job. Kenny, you're a diversified guy, and I know everybody's looking forward to seeing you back at the IWK 250 this July. Let's talk about the 2018 version. You were competitive in that race. You were in a good car. You finished that race up third until everything came to tech. What was that like for you?
Surprising. So, here's my version. Of course, my version is accurate and the truth because I was in the race. So, we dropped the green flag on Saturday night, and we get to lap 70, and it starts raining. And on Saturday night, I was just holding my own, and I was pushing in the middle of the corner. And, the car was tight, pushing. So then they rained it out. Well, then the next day is Sunday, and we start the race at lap 70, and we got to go 250 laps, whatever it is. Yeah, 250. And then now it's hot. So I got shoved up out of the bottom groove, and I had to run the high groove. I had to let them – they ganged up on me.
Yeah.
But I know that you just got to pedal hard. And then, I got my mirror on my left side, and then I get down in lane when I can. Well, the further that race went on, my car started getting better. They all started getting loose, getting in the corner. And so, see, that second day when it got hot, that favored my car.
Yeah.
And here I come. I came from 16th to 3rd, and I was running the leader down, and then the race was over. So I was thrilled to death with third place. And it was awesome. We were on podium. It was awesome. Well, about an hour after the race, when the race is over, they make the top five cars go in this inspection area. And nobody's allowed in there except the crew chiefs. Mm-hmm. Like an hour later, they said, we need everybody's trophies back. And I'm like, what? What's that all about? I really didn't understand what was going on.
Right.
So they took everybody's trophies back, the first place, second place, and third place. Well, hell, I take off, and I go to Eldora. I leave Canada, and I go down to Eldora. And I'm doing TV for the truck race, and I'm racing my modified at Eldora. And all of a sudden, I think it was Speed Sport News walked up to me, and they said, hey, you just won that IWK 250. I'm like, what? So then they explained it to me, was that what they were doing, the first two guys had illegal carburetors. And then to make everything proper, they had to go to all the gauge companies. They had to go through everything legally, and they had to make it very transparent where everybody knew. Listen, here's the bottom line. This is the biggest quote that I want everybody to use up there.
Okay.
I would have rather finished third and the first and second place guy been legal. Okay, that it's just that simple.
Right.
But I will tell you this. I talked to everybody about it because everybody came up to me, over the next 2 weeks. Those 604 crate motors, hell, everybody cheats them up, and those two guys just got caught. And, you know, but they all do it.
Right.
But what happens is they all don't check it all the time. So it's like, well, hell, they're not going to check, so you just do it. So, you know, listen, it's all good. Hell, I'd cheat my stuff up if I ran a local track and they never checked it.
Right.
But, you know, that's the way it was. I didn't have anything to do with it, and that's that.
Yeah, and hats off to the sanctioning body for sticking to their guns, stacking the cars, and that's what every competitor wants, right? As a competitor, that's what you guys want, are the cars to be checked, and everybody not just checked your car and not the next guy. They want them checked equally, and you got to hand it to the Pro Stock Tour. The guys do the job, and man, oh, man, they hold you to the letter of the law.
Well, you know, they checked five of us. Okay, they checked five. Now, hey, listen, I got a better story for you. Listen to this one.
Yeah, okay.
Like 3 weeks later, I go out to Stockton, California, the home of Ernie Irvin. And I go out there, and I'm racing the exact same car. Super late model, but you just put a 604 crate in there. Everybody's got their own name of this division, but for me, it's a super late model. And they put a crate motor in it, 604 crate motor, aluminum head, good motor.
Yep.
I go out there, and there's like 32 cars, only 22 make the race. And I started like 8th or 10th, the same damn thing, but a little bitty bullring, way smaller. I run second, right? I finished second. The same damn thing happens. We all go through tech, but in Stockton, California, what they do is, you know, they seal these motors. You know, the motors are sealed, right?
Right, right.
I mean, well, the guy comes through tech. The officials look at the motor. Now, this is the story they're telling me.
Right.
The officials are looking at the motor. They look up at the driver, and they said, "What is this?" And the driver puts his head down. And he goes, "I'm caught." Here's what he did. He took the motor apart. He broke the seal open, took the motor apart, but the driver was not in his right mind when he sent the seal, when he sent the rope you're supposed to go through, like the intake bolt, the head bolt, the water pump bolt. He did it the wrong way or something.
Yeah.
So he cheated his motor up internally but lost his mind when he went to reseal it. And out there they have this crazy rule called tap-out rule.
A tap-out.
Yeah, now listen to this, though. This is crazy. Tap-out means, okay, you won the race, but you've been caught illegal.
Right.
If you tap out, we will let you keep the trophy and call you the winner. But the $10,000 went to me, the second place car.
So,
and I'm like, what? I'm like, what in the world kind of rule is that? But so it all has to do with those 604 crate motors. That's the deal.
Absolutely. Yeah. No. And you know, it's funny. Going back to when 604s were just kind of starting, and we're obviously not, it's not a bad thing, you know, it's part of racing now, but, you know, we're at New Smyrna Speedway, we're, you know, the BP gas station that's right across the road, there was a tent set up right in, you know, right off the property of that gas station, and the guy was selling crate motor seals. Right.
Oh my!
At the gas station, you know. But it's just it's comical when you talk about crate motors. But you know, one thing, Kenny, I will say, and it's kind of cool. You know, both those stories are to do with a straight up teching program. It's not just a dog and pony show where they bring Kenny Wallace in, they give him a cheated up race car, and they expect him to go win, which happens a lot of times. You know, where there's race. You know, racetracks host a special event, and they get a NASCAR guy to come in, and they give him the hot dogs car, and they give him whatever they want for left side weight, and it's kind of run what you brung for him, but everybody else has got a rule book. It's the IWK 250 is not like that at all, obviously, number
right.
one. They tech the car the exact same way as they tech the, whether
in
you finish fifth.
Everybody.
Exactly.
So the winner, the second, everybody can stare and watch it be teched.
100%. Yep. And it sounds like it's the same way out at that Stockton race as well. And you know, that is definitely a cool thing. If I was going to go watch a guy race, you know, specifically to watch you race, that's the way I'd want it. And I love that about the IWK 250.
Well, I think, listen, you know, I grew up around Junior Hanley, and so did you all, you know, the great Dick Trickle, Bob Seneca, Ed Howe. And I, you know, listen, I was born in 63, so that's my era. And, but listen, I also grew up around Gary Ballou and guys that, you know, do everything they can do to win. I've seen it all. But, you know, to me, the best racing that I ever was part of and watched was in Wisconsin. You know, the great Dick Trickle, Tom Reffner, Alan Kulicki, all those great racers, they raced for a living, and they raced 6 out of 7 nights. And the great Dick Trickle told me this. He said, he called me my boy, and he always called me Kenny. He said, my boy, we raced each other 6 out of 7 nights. We don't have time to be jacking with each other because we got to race each other the very next night. And they didn't have any money. So, you know, I believe it was called the Wisconsin Auto Racing Association. Mm. And they all agreed that, listen, you know, we're trying to do this for a living. And then in the winter, they would race snowmobiles. So the moral of this whole story is that they all took care of each other. They all ran 2-barrel carburetors so they could run their motors forever. And, you know, Trickle and those guys, they believed in everybody being legal. And it was very hard on them to go down south to all pro racing back in the 80s, because when you went down south, it was a free-for-all. But I learned legality of racing from the great Dick Trickle, of that whole Wisconsin group.
Yeah, and you got to go out there, and especially if you're doing it night after night, right? You can't afford to get popped.
No, and you had to. At some of the tracks, they had a white lane. It was painted white. There was a white line painted all the way around the middle of the racetrack. And it got to where if somebody was on your outside and you moved up over that white line and pushed them in the wall, you were black flagged. So, in other words, they taught the drivers, hold your line.
Was that at Slinger, Kenny?
I don't remember. Maybe it was, but I forgot what track it was. But, you know, I raced enough up there. And hell, I didn't even know that rule. And I thought, that is incredible, you know. But my, you know, that is just the way they grew up racing in Wisconsin. Hold your line. Give me the damn outside. I'm on your outside. Quit cutting me off, you know. So, yeah, it's pretty incredible what I learned.
Absolutely. Yeah, pretty amazing stuff. Kenny, I know we all look forward to seeing you at the IWK 250 July 20th weekend. Tickets actually just went on sale for the event. And for you to be coming back up here, you're going to be in the same car? You're working the same deal?
I believe so. I'm not positive. I talked to my crew chief last year, Gary Crooks. He owns Port City Racing now. And Gary Crooks, even though I'm a dirt racer, actually I'm working on some things on my car right now because it's tedious work and trying to get faster. But Gary Crooks was part of that. I called him about 4 days ago, told him I needed some parts for my dirt car. And I said, are you going to be my crew chief again for that IWK 250? And he says, I don't know. I haven't heard anything. But Gary got me going. And so, I mean, I'd love to drive that same car. I'm not sure. I know my wife is coming this year, though, so I'm excited about that.
Yeah, it'd be great to see Kim up here. I know she's going to have a great time in Nova Scotia. I'll tell you, you cannot beat the time you'll have at Riverside International Speedway. If you haven't been out there, you got to make tracks. You got to come out, and that's a perfect weekend to do it. Kenny Wallace is going to be there. You're going to have the best of the best in super late model racing on that end of the country. We get some of the U.S. guys up. And I'll tell you what, it's a party, isn't it, Kenny? It's a gas.
Oh, man, you know, people always say to me, you know, we've been talking about, you know, Nova Scotia and Riverside Speedway for a year now. People always say, tell me about that up there. I said, hey, listen, here's how it went. Mark Martin called me in March of last year, and he said, Herman, you know, Mark never called me. He always texted me. And he says, you got to do this. He says, it is wonderful. It is just beautiful. It's breathtaking. You know, and Mark's a neat freak. I mean, if you see Mark Martin, he's perfectly perfect. I mean, his airplane, his home, his hangar that he put. I mean, this guy pimped out.
Yeah.
And he was right. It is absolute beautiful country, but the people are better. That party on Thursday night, that was one for the ages. I get to drinking Bud Light. I'm down there in the middle of these, like, 1,000 fans. And till at 1 o'clock the next day, they had to wake me up. I was buzzed pretty good. But that's when I realized that your beer up there is a much higher percentage than ours. It was potent. And that Thursday night party, everybody needs to show up, come on out. My wife would be with me. And then that's where I learned of your guys' drink up there called the Clamato. It helped me with my small hangover on Friday.
Yeah, that'll fix you up.
Absolutely.
It'll fix you up for sure.
It'll put hair on your chest and it'll fix you up, Kenny. That's definitely. When you come up here, make sure you remember to bring your driving gear. 10-4?
Oh, my God. Can you believe that?
I can. That's amazing. But I can believe it. I worked with a guy named J.R. Fitzpatrick for a long time. The guy would forget his helmet every other week.
Hey, let me tell you what caused that. So I go to Texas this week. I land at the Dallas-Fort Worth Airport. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. I mean, my heart started pounding. I'm like, I left all my driving equipment in the pickup of my truck. Well, here's what happened. I am used to driving myself to the airport because, you know, we got grandbabies and Kim can't take me.
Right.
So the night before, I put my helmet and uniform back in the back seat of my pickup truck. And I thought, I'll be organized. I'll jump in the truck and I'll head to the airport. The next day, Kim says, hey, would you like me to take you to the airport? I'm like, yeah, that'd be nice. Me and my wife, we talk all the way to the airport. We talk all the way back. Well, it messed my rhythm up. I forgot to grab my helmet back. So, Lord Almighty, I have good friends in Texas, and they set me up. And but boy, I felt naked, you know, putting on other people's helmets. And so yeah, I'll bring all my equipment for sure.
Yeah, Junior had to throw that arrow. I knew he was. Gonna.
I had to throw it at you, Kenny. It was definitely. I giggled when I seen that on Twitter. That was funny.
Yeah, and you gotta follow Kenny Wallace on Twitter. It's Kenny_Wallace. If you do not follow Kenny Wallace now. Trust me when I say you're going to want to have a look at it. Kenny is the real deal. Bud, I can't wait to see you at the IWK 250. And I know you're coming into Canada a couple of times. You're going to take on the beautiful Jukasa Speedway with the APC Series as well earlier in July.
You know, all this is a product of me running good at Riverside Speedway. We ran that race up there. We ran good. And it just, listen, I'm an asphalt racer, right? I am. But when I ran good up there at Riverside, it woke the asphalt community up because, see, there were some drivers in that race at Nova Scotia at Riverside. There were some drivers in that race that are thought very highly of. And even, you know, a lot of people are like, damn. So I had all these, hell, because of that race, I'm running a wedge asphalt car at South Bend, Indiana now. I'm going to Jukasa, going back out to Stockton. So it's really a product of you all up there because I ran so good. The asphalt track started calling me.
Well, we got you to cut your teeth at Flamborough Speedway. I'll never forget that night where you got turned and the guy got put ahead of you. That was hilarious. But we got you cut your teeth pretty good.
Flamborough and Sauble. I'm going to tell you what, Sauble's tolerable. But Flamborough is by far the tightest little asphalt track I've ever been on. Man, if you run the bottom and you don't come off in the grass, the guy on the outside's got no chance. So, we set quick time there about 3 years ago. And, Junior Hanley was setting that car up there. Same deal. Show up, there's, 30 cars, and damn, I set quick time. And they dropped the green flag. I go in the corner, and I got a little bit of a push. And I don't roll the middle real good. And that guy jacked me up in the rear, spun me out. I was pissed. I had to go clear to the back and fight my way up there. But, Sauble is a wonderful track, great people. But it takes patience. And, boy, you can't have any there because you got to go,
Yeah, amazing. Kenny, it's been great talking with you tonight. I know everybody's excited to see you back up on this side of the border. We wish you luck in that dirt car. Go out and get a few more wins and just prove to Schrader that you've got more in you than he does.
Oh, I will never fill Kenny Schrader's shoes. Actually, I will give it all up to Schrader. Schrader's the one that taught me how to run dirt and opened this new life up for me. So, listen, thanks for doing what you do. Your radio show is worldwide famous, and I really appreciate all of you.
If you need a spotter for that APC race, just give me a call. I'm right up the road.
Okay, absolutely, man. Hell, you know, I mean, I got a lot of friends up that way, but you know, you never know. So,
you bet, brother.
Thank you so much.
You take it easy. Say hi to Kim, and you have safe travels, Kenny Wallace. We will see you this summer.
Okay, bye-bye.
You want to believe it? That is Kenny Wallace, and he is coming. Man, it's going to be great to see him back up here. I know for sure that IWK 250, to see Kenny in that race, I'll never forget hearing Brad Mann, which was calling the action from about the center of the track, Josh Paxton down in turn 3-4, Jerry in turn 1 and 2, Tim and I upstairs. Brad Mann was, I watched him on the infield. He looked like a corkscrew. He was going around following Kenny, and Kenny picked up another spot and another spot and another spot, and Brad was coming unglued watching Kenny Wallace come through the field. When Kenny says he went from 16th to 3rd, he did, and he did it in a hurry. And then it sort of just leveled right out there. It was a dynamite race. It's going to be another memorable moment in 2019. You can guarantee it.
Absolutely. And how about the accessibility for Kenny Wallace? You know, obviously makes himself available for RTR all the time, you know, with all of the announcements and places that he goes. But, I mean, the accessibility to the Canadian race fan. You know, we touched on it there. Sauble Speedway, he's been there a couple times, right?
Yep.
He's been to Flamborough Speedway. He's been to, obviously, Riverside Speedway.
Estevan Speedway on the Saskatoon.
Correct, yep, Estevan. And as well, he's going to be heading to Jucasa. Now, he has raced there in the past when it was Cayuga in the ASA days.
Right.
But, you know, definitely coming back and running with the APC Tour. Just a... you know, good on Kenny for everything that he does. And man, it sounds like he's having a lot of fun.
He is.
Doesn't it sound like he's having fun?
He sure does. And, you know, I'll tell you, I know Kenny Wallace. I know him personally. And Kenny is that guy. When you meet Kenny Wallace, he's the same guy that you've seen on Fox.
Yep.
He's that guy.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a lot of stars that you see on television. But when you meet them, they're not the same person.
Exactly.
I can tell you right now, Kenny Wallace is that guy. He loves every single race fan. It don't matter where you came from.
Yeah.
Kenny Wallace has got, if he's got a minute, he will share that minute with you.
Yes.
I guarantee he will.
And the tap out rule that he brought up there.
Yeah.
That should never happen. So I stand with him on that one.
Yeah.
And that racetrack needs to drop that rule immediately. Yeah. And no racers, while you're listening out there, no, you can't have the tap-out rule.
No.
Absolutely not.
No
tap-out rule up here.
No. That's
just tossed.
That sounds crazy. we're going to hit this break. We'll be back. Stay with us.
I drank my sorry self up out of bed.
I'm Cora the Joy, driver, whatever you want to put me in, and you're listening to Race Time Radio.
Hair of the dog for my head.
From coast to coast, you're listening to Canada Talks.
Alexa, play NASCAR Radio on Sirius XM.
Sirius XM NASCAR Radio from Sirius XM.
Start your engine!
Gain access to NASCAR's biggest names.
Martin Truex Jr.
Kyle Busch.
Chase Elliott.
Hear live coverage of every single race.
They're side by side for the win.
It's unfiltered 24/7 NASCAR.
Welcome to Victory Lane.
We've got breaking news. Let's go to the hotline.
This is Sirius XM NASCAR Radio, Channel 90. Listen on the app or at home on devices equipped with Amazon Alexa. Learn more at SiriusXM.com/NASCAR.
Race Time Radio is brought to you by the Quality Inn, Halifax Airport, the official stay of the Race Time Radio broadcast crew. Also by APX Racewear, the motorsports leader in custom crew apparel and fire suits. Also by the Wooden Door Bistro.
If you're a Springsteen fan, you just found the promised land.
Hey,
hear rare interviews and performances.
Oh, USA.
Live concerts.
Is there anybody alive?
Celebrity guest DJs.
This is Rob Lowe.
Hey, baby, it's Little Steven here.
And more exclusives when listening to Bruce Springsteen's channel.
Welcome, Bruce Springsteen, to E Street Radio, your home away from home.
Great to be here.
E Street Radio, Sirius XM, Channel 20.
Race Time Radio to go.
Streaming live or on demand.
Grab the free app
at racetimeradio.com.
Here's what you missed
on NHL Game Day.
Scotty Bowman joins us. When you were coaching a team, was it important to kind of move a piece out, move a piece in, just to kind of keep it fresh, to bring in guys who hadn't won before?
I think winning a championship, it's very difficult to make changes. It'd be always good if you could add a piece or two without disturbing the chemistry of the team, which was not easy.
NHL Game Day on Sirius XM NHL Network Radio. Sirius XM 91.
Taking you all the way to the track and back. It's Racetime Radio.
I feel the need for speed.
And we are back with you live tonight on Racetime Radio. So glad you could tune in. Thanks for carving some time out and joining us on Racetime Radio here on Sirius XM Channel 167. Or maybe you're tuned in through the week on 98.9 XFM, Andy Ganish. Or how about those great guys at the Performance Motorsport Network.com or Gearhead Country Radio. Whatever way you've tuned into Racetime, we do appreciate it. And we sure hope you tell your friends and everybody to tune in to Race Time. Follow us along on Twitter and Facebook. And if you happen to have missed the show and you want to go back and listen, maybe you just caught the tail end of Kevin Wallace there, you can go back and have a listen. Just get to iTunes, search Race Time Radio, and presto. It's going to be right there. If you hit subscribe, it's going to be in your box. Every time we do a show, no matter what it is, you'll have it. So those are the different ways you can access Racetime Radio, and as mentioned, we sure do appreciate it. Junior, unlike you, you watched the Cup race today. I was at the Sauble Speedway drivers meeting and had a chance to meet a bunch of brand new people that I haven't been introduced to, talk to the staff, and I'll tell you what, things are looking good for Sauble Speedway in 2019.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one thing, last week we didn't talk about it a whole lot of your new position and what you're going to be kind of doing at Sauble Speedway. So the big thing, it sounds like you had a lot of fun today, number one.
I did. I had a blast.
Obviously, Sauble Speedway's got a different looking schedule for this year. Kind of a rebuilding year, right? It's just a great looking schedule, I might add. It sounds like you guys have an awesome deal working for next year.
Yeah, we do. We got the pro lights in. We got pro lights coming in a handful of times. It's going to be like a series within a series, if you will. It's going to be NASCAR sanctioned. It's going to be our top division. It is part of the NASCAR home tracks, the Whelen All-American Series. You're going to also see our Thunderstocks. They're going to be a great class. They're going to be our Division 2 Junior Late Models Bone Stocks. And we announced today, we haven't got all the paperwork done yet, but we're in the process of it. Legend cars are also going to be a part at Sauble Speedway. So the schedule right now says tentative, and that's the reason why it's got tentative. We need to make some adjustments. We got some additions here, and we got some things to move around, but we're going to get to all that. Things are looking pretty darn good, I'll tell you. Speaking to some of the pro late model guys, if you're not part of it yet, trust me when I say you're going to want to be part of it. It's a great payout. It's a chance to earn a NASCAR championship as part of the All-American Series, our track championship. And it's going to be some hot racing, I'll tell you.
Yeah, definitely.
You got your work cut out for you if you think you're going to walk in and just take it.
Yeah, and one of the big things, too, you know, and I applaud on the pro late model side, you know, you guys have the Jukasa qualifier as well.
Yeah,
throughout the season, which looks like a great event. And you know, looking at pro late models, man, you know, you got a lot of testing time to get in for that doubleheader weekend, which I think is, you have to do well in that doubleheader weekend in order to walk away with an APC championship.
It's a must. And I think the guy that does come away with it is going to have a real good shot at that championship.
Exactly. Yep. So, you know, there's always a turning point in a schedule, right? And you know, you look at I'm just going to use the NASCAR Cup Series schedule for instance. You've got a few wild card races that are in there, right? You've got your Talladegas and your Daytonas, and then you've got your road courses where everybody's on the lead lap, so you can feasibly finish 40th at the end for the NASCAR guys. you know, looking at a short track schedule, whether it be the Parts for Trucks Tour, whether it be the APC Tour, whether it be, you know, the CRA Tour down south, there's always a wild card, you know, and it's usually a block of races where, you know, they're back-to-back and there's a short turnaround where you need to be ready for it. It's really kind of unprecedented to have two back-to-back points races for a late model series here in Ontario within 2 days.
Yeah.
You know, it's definitely going to put the pressure on the guys to perform. You're not going to want to go out there and knock your stuff around in night number one, because it gives you that kind of that speed week feel, where
absolutely
you have to bolt your stuff back together, you know, to get ready for the next night. But the preventative maintenance that these guys do in their shops, you know, I applaud Sauble Speedway for giving the two or the one night break. If they went back to back, I think that it would be a disservice to the racing.
Well, it'd be tough. It would be tough.
I think that the teams that you're going to see put together an effort for that deal, they have to do a lot of planning, number one, because your preventative maintenance after a 100-lap race with those cars, you got to take the car apart. You got to. It's not like you're going to roll it in the trailer, even if there's not a mark on it and you sat in victory lane. You cannot roll it out of the trailer and go racing two nights later.
Right. You got to go through that car.
You got to go through that car. You got to make sure nothing moved. You got to make sure that the brakes are right. You got to make sure the clutch is good. All those things. You got to change your fluids, right? You got to do a preventative maintenance on those cars. And really, if you get into any type of trouble on the Friday night, you have a long road to hoe to get ready for that Sunday race.
Yeah, you sure do.
So, you know, a guy that is looking to do that, and it's not because you work there. That's all I'm saying this. I'm saying it because, you know, it's in your best interest. If you're running pro late model, it's in your best interest to get Sauble dialed in and be at the front of the pack for night number one of that race and night number two,
right?
Not only for the schedule or the championship implications, but just for your workload, number one, you've got a chance to space out your schedule a little bit because there's a few races leading up to that that event, right?
Yeah, well,
You've got a few points-paying races leading up to that event, so definitely a big opportunity, you know, between Flamborough, Delaware, and Sauble now running prolates. It's definitely healthy for the prolate model division.
And how about APC? You got to give APC a big shout out. Just a couple of weeks ago, they came out with a program that if you run the APC series and you take in your Saturday night racetrack, be it Flamborough, be it Delaware, be it Sauble Speedway, and you turn some numbers, even if you don't turn any kind of big number, you can still benefit. They've come out with a program. Get to APC site and have a look at it. What a cool thing. And it's their way of giving back to the Saturday night tracks that are helping feed the series.
100%.
And what a way of doing it. Hey, we just had a big power flicker. Just so you know, if by chance you happen to lose us, we are experiencing some heavy-duty winds outside the Racetime Radio studio.
I'm really surprised everything's still up right now.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, it really dipped, but thankfully it stayed up.
But 100% echoed. You know, the racing the series is one thing, right? And you know, there's not a lot of races in a pro-late model schedule. You know, when you look at the Parts for Trucks Tour, what is it, 11 races? There's 10 races in the Parts for Trucks.
I believe we do 8 of them. I'm going to say there's 12.
There's 12.
There's 12 races.
So there's 12 races there. You know, there's the 10 races or just under that in the APC Tour.
Right.
You know, I don't know the total numbers, but there's not a lot of racing in that. You know, like there's a lot of events that are big. That you want to get out to, but it gives you the opportunity on a local Saturday night level to fill that gap in. And
sure,
if you're a racer, you want to turn laps.
Yeah.
That's what you want to do. And, you know, the nice part is it costs you a lot less to run a Saturday night show than it does to run a 100-lap APC race. So it's definitely a neat deal for the teams. Gets more racing opportunity, and I think anybody who's a true racer wants to race more. That's the number one name in the game.
Well, if they got the budget, right? It
exactly.
All comes down to budget,
yep.
And you got to really tip the cap to APC for putting out programs like that that encourage guys that if they have the budget,
exactly.
Here's another carrot for you. And I can tell you what, in speaking with guys like Paul Grizzell that own Sauble Speedway, stuff like that goes a long way for everybody.
Yes.
It works for the speedways, definitely works for the competitor base. Super cool that Luke has done that and the guys from APC. It's going to be a tremendous summer. And, you know, there's just every time we turn around, there's another reason why 2019 is going to be cool.
Yes, 100%. It seems like, you know, just on the show alone, we've stumbled across a bunch of different tidbits of why this year is going to be cool. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, the last couple of weeks, we've been seeing news releases and stuff like that. And of course, you know, later on in the program, we're going to have Greg McPherson from Motorama and Inside Track. But, you know, Motorama is a place where you learn a lot of things that are going to be happening for next
sure.
year.
Sure, yeah.
And,
yeah.
you know, it used to be back in the day with motorsports, and I'm going to go back, you know, a solid 8 years ago, 10 years ago. Really, the tracks were just dabbling with websites and just dabbling with the internet, you know, in
general.
It just
started.
Yeah, but like, really, in general, the racetracks were just kind of dabbling. And really, you would learn what's happening the next year at Performance World, you know, going back years back. Now it puts a little bit of an emphasis to hold your information to get to that point for your unveiling of information. So there's always some big news, whether it be new sponsor additions, new schedule additions, or guys changing divisions. You know, there's always a lot of stuff that comes out of that show. But with today's power of social media and obviously with programs like this, you know, we kind of fill in the gaps all the way throughout the year. I'm looking forward to seeing what comes out of Motorama this year, because I know for a fact that there's three announcements that I can't talk about that are cool.
Oh, that are going to come out at Motorama?
Yes.
Ah, see that? That's cool. There's going to be a lot of emphasis on the show.
Absolutely.
And we're going to find out what is new, what Greg can tell us.
Yep.
We're going to do that a little bit later, hour number two, which is coming up real close here. I got to let you know, we are going to throw it back to Toronto here in just a couple of moments. And those guys are going to get us up to date with the news package, the little highlight package here. Get you all up to date on everything. I can imagine it's going to tell you that the wind is a-blowing, because it is. Right after that, takes 90 seconds, right after that, we're going to kick off hour number two, and we're going to hear from Anthony Leak. We're going to talk about that new speedway going in Kenora, Ontario. We're also going to talk to Greg McPherson from Inside Track and Motorama and get you up to speed on everything there. We'll hear from Kyle Busch and the truck win. How about Christopher Bell? We're going to hear from him, and we're going to do all that on the other side of this quick news update. And then Junior and I are going to be back for hour number two, and we got lots coming.
How many races is Seabell going to win this year?
Oh, man, I'll tell you what, that guy's on a tear, and it's just the beginning of the year. It's going to be interesting.
How many? Put a number on it.
I don't know, six, seven?
I think seven?
Yeah, six, seven races. He's got the potential.
I'm going for a record, like 11.
You think?
Yeah.
I don't know about that. There's a lot of good, strong teams in
Xfinity. I'm going for 11 wins for Seabell this year.
How about Alex Labbe? Was back into a car.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Great to see.
Good news. He was in the 90. He wasn't back in the 36 car. And I did text Alex to find out if he was, is there more races that we don't know about? And he said, no. Unfortunately, this one here is the only one that I can tell you about that's coming up.
Yeah.
And but you never know. I didn't know that this one was coming up.
Exactly.
So it came together fast. What a wheel, man. Alex Labbe finished the race on Saturday in that 20th spot. And that's saying a lot, because he didn't have no test time, no nothing. But I do have to throw it back to Toronto. We are at that spot of the night. We'll throw it back there, and then we will be back for hour number two tonight, right here on Racetime Radio. Don't you go anywhere. We will be back in just a couple of moments.
You're listening to Canada Talks on Sirius XM, channel 167.
Racetime Radio is brought to you by the Quality Inn Halifax Airport, the official stay of the Racetime Radio broadcast crew. Also by APX Racewear, the motorsports leader in custom crew apparel and fire suits. Also by the Wooden Door Bistro.
Let's see if we got enough fuel to burn this thing down. Come on, come on.
Nobody gets you closer to the drivers than SiriusXM NASCAR Radio.
Stick a flag here, baby.
All
yeah, baby!
Things racing.
Oh, my God!
SiriusXM NASCAR Radio.
Holy crap, did you see that?
One race at a time.
Left side up, left side up.
Jimmy Johnson's blowing the race leader off too!
It's all on SiriusXM NASCAR Radio, Channel 90.
Show them how to burn it down.
Or on your phone when you get out of the car with the SiriusXM app.
With the two Joes
here on Race Time Radio
on Sirius XM 167,
where Canada talks.
Ah, there we go. That's the sound I was looking for. And hour number two begins tonight, live on Race Time Radio, right here on Sirius XM channel 167. Good old Canada talks. So glad you carved out some time to tune in tonight. We sure do appreciate it. Something I want to get to before we hear from Kyle Busch, after 52 wins in the Gander Outdoor Truck Series. We got some great comments here that we lifted from the media center right after the race. But just before we get to that, breaking news came out the other day. And I'll tell you what, Junior, I about fell off my chair when I seen this breaking news. And that is the NASCAR K&N Pro Series East, West, and the Modifieds that run down south, all of those are going to be carried live on Fans Choice Television this year. That's huge.
Absolutely. And you know what? It is so needed. And the neatest part was, for me, the neatest part, it's definitely cool. It's needed. It's live. It's all of those great things. Everything is live today, right? So when you just pick up your phone and go to Twitter, a tweet has got a 3-minute lifespan, right?
Right.
So, I mean, these races are taking place in a world where everybody and their brother can read about it on Twitter or see a grainy video of what took place off of somebody's cell phone instantly.
Right.
And they find out who won the race at wherever, whatever track. I don't care where it is, Stafford,
right,
or Bowman Gray or wherever it is. You can find out. If you really want to know who won that race,
yep,
you can find it out. So, it's the model that they had been working on for a long period of time, and they still work on here in Canada, Mexico, with the tape delay platform. It's definitely it's a difficult deal, and it's not where it used to be, and that's not a shot at anybody. It's just the way that
no,
it is.
No, it's just the way it is.
And the streaming atmosphere of Fans Choice is definitely awesome. I loved watching New Smyrna. I love the fact that I could watch it. Listening to Ryan Preece's comments this weekend on how happy he was about the Whelen All American Series, I think is echoed by every competitor that actually competes in the Whelen Modified Tour in the K&N East or West divisions.
Right.
One thing I hope it doesn't do is affect what happens at the racetrack level.
What do you mean by that?
But the amount of people that are going to go.
Well, and that was going to be part of my comment. I'm really happy to see that this is going to take place, and it is going to be absolutely free, I might add. The same as the coverage we got from New Smyrna Speedway. Anybody that took in the World Series of Asphalt Stock Car Racing that wasn't at the track that tuned into Fans Choice, you'll know all you had to do was register to Fans Choice and click that live button, and bang, you were right there. Speed 51 was the production company that took care of what we seen in the World Series stuff. I don't know who the production company is going to be to take care of the NASCAR K&N Pro Series East, West, and the Modifieds.
Yep.
I don't know, but I'm sure they're going to do a good job.
Yes.
The camera angles, all that kind of stuff are going to play key roles.
Yep.
One thing that I did notice, and it was Matt Weaver actually had some comments there, that I don't know whether he spoke with the different racetracks.
He did, yep.
But there was definitely, it was a surprise to those speedways. It wasn't a welcome surprise to those speedways. They would have pushed back, guaranteed. I'm a firm believer, and I would imagine there's lots of people out there that would agree or disagree. But to see the race live, if it was a one-camera shot like you would see on Facebook Live, where, you know, you can see the track, but you can't really see the numbers until they go by, or you can't see the action because it's not a multi-camera shot, that would be one thing.
Yeah.
When you look at the production that Speed 51 did for the World Series of Asphalt Stock Car Racing, it was multi-camera. They had roving pit reporter. They had a camera on that guy. It was a good production. Like, it was
absolutely
very, very watchable. You could follow the race. You could understand. The commentators did a great job. It was Adam and not Corey.
Casey.
There you go. Those two guys did a great job in the booth.
Yep.
And you could watch the show.
Absolutely.
It was very, very good.
Yep.
If it is that type of production, I can tell you what. If you're looking at adverse weather conditions, if you're looking at, well, I've got something else I'm going to do tonight, but I don't want to miss that race, it could be ticket sales. It really could be. Now, it isn't going to affect ticket sales for guys like you and I. We're all the way up here in Canada, and now we're going to get an opportunity to watch the Can-Am Series, East, West, and the Modifieds.
Yep.
That's huge.
Absolutely.
But what's it going to do to those different racetracks that are right there?
And yes, and that's where I was kind of going with it as well. Now, I do have to say this about that. And the biggest thing that I see different today versus 5 years ago versus 10 years ago, you know, I think that the ability to see it and the ability to attract people to watch it,
right,
is valuable. And now, a four-hour circular radius around each one of those venues, that's a difficult portion because those people, you know, you've got the ability, it's 3 hours away, I don't really feel like driving, and I'll just crank it on.
Right.
Outside of that, you weren't going to get them anyways.
That's right.
And
yeah, you're talking about that circle.
Exactly. So you're talking about that circle, but the biggest thing that I see is nobody in that circle, and the people that are in that circle, cannot sustain the value that it takes to put one of those race cars on the racetrack anymore. And they can't do it. And they haven't been able to for the past 5, 8, 10 years.
Right.
And the biggest thing about it is, no matter how you slice the cake, if you want to be on the racetrack in a K&N Series car for any K&N Series race, it's going to be $35,000 out of your pocket. It doesn't matter if you go to somebody else's equipment,
right,
or whether you build your own stuff with the intention of going to race in it.
Right.
It's going to cost $35,000.
If you're going to go try and win.
No, if you're going to go try to win, you're going to go to one of the big teams and you're going to spend $70,000. Call it $60,000 if you want to get technical. A one-off shot is going to be $70,000 all day long if you want to strap into one of the best K&N cars out there.
Right.
So
what's that have to do with television?
$70,000, I'm getting to it. No matter how many people you put in those grandstands, it's not going to be enough to justify the amount of money that you need to raise to get it.
Oh, I see. So you're saying the payout?
No. The payout. Well, you combined the payout.
Because that's what it is.
Combined the payout and the return on investment for the sponsor.
Right.
The sponsor strapping his sticker on the side of a race car and going and racing at Stafford Speedway. You can get away with pulling $5,000 out of a guy. You can get away with, I don't care if the guy's a multimillionaire construction guru.
Right.
And he's got money to burn. He's only going to throw away $5,000, $10,000, $15,000.
Right.
That there is, you know, washable money. He can give you that money.
He can
money
justify
and
that.
He could justify it and say
right.
that it's entertainment. You start getting to $25,000, $35,000, $50,000, and now you're into an investment. And the Fans Choice platform, I feel, gives these guys the opportunity to now sell to a national audience. Now, you need to build that. You need to
right.
build the audience base.
Well,
if the first K&N race, there's probably going to be 5,000 people watching it. Call it 7, 8, 10,000. I don't care. I don't
right.
care what that number is.
Right.
It's not going to be 5 million that we're watching the Daytona 500.
Right.
Doesn't need to be.
No.
That's the neat part. If there is 25, 35,000 people watching that race, and you've got, call it 2,000, 4,000 people in the grandstand, now it's a hell of a lot easier to go out and shake the bushes,
sponsor.
Sell the sponsorship, and get it. Now that's going to put on a better show, which is going to attract more people.
I can't see it making a better show. Well, I can't see it.
It's going to. If it's easier to attain money.
If it paid more, maybe.
No. Paid more, or you've got the ability to raise more.
Yeah.
It's always better racing.
Sure.
If you've got the ability to raise more money, if you've got the ability to win more money, or combination of the two, that provides better racing.
I can see the platform working good for everybody if by chance you could black it out within an hour's radius of that speedway.
Well, you can do that, but you can just download an IP blocker and you're done. If you download an IP blocker, you can get around that.
I know, but where I've been getting off, and I've said this for years, live radio will grow fans.
Correct.
Live television will cost fans.
And I agree with you.
Unless the audience is full. If that racetrack is full to capacity or thereabouts, and the promoter is healthy and happy,
yes,
then by all means, turn her on. Let's grow the sport, because it is no doubt going to grow the base.
Yep.
It's going to grow the base. It's going to take time. Even if it's free, it's going to take time, but it will grow the base. And I agree wholeheartedly.
Yes.
But there is a catch-22 in there.
Yep.
That Speedway needs to sell tickets to survive and to be able to produce the kind of money it costs for one of those races.
And one thing that's missing out here is a lot of people question the fact, hey, the NASCAR truck race is live on TV, or the ARCA race is live on TV. Well, newsflash, the network pays a tremendous amount of money to the racetrack to allow that to happen.
That's right.
So when you look at the Cup Series on TV, Fox and NBC write a massive, big, old, fat check to
NASCAR,
which is divvied amongst the tracks.
And then
peanuts are given to the competitors.
Right.
So when you look at that model works because it doesn't take money out of the pocket. The network's not in the position today to pay for that.
Fans'
Choice was private, so this is the devil's advocate. If Fans' Choice was private, which it's owned by NASCAR, right?
Right.
Fans' Choice is owned by NASCAR.
Yeah, it is.
So, but if it was private, or if NASCAR was avidly selling ads, which I don't know, they might be doing this.
Sure.
And then writing a check back to subsidize the event.
Yep.
I mean, that's a home run situation at that point.
Right.
If they are able to cover that loss that they're going to see at the gate, which I don't think is going to be that big.
Right.
If you want to go see a race, I would rather sit in the grandstands and watch a race than to watch it
on TV. So would I.
100%.
So would I.
And I think that's echoed, amongst every race fan out there that has ever been to a race.
Yep.
You would rather be there than to watch it on TV. The casual fan can't be looked at as a race fan the casual race fan, once they're a race fan, they're going to want to go to the track. And
well, they should.
Exactly.
They should want
to. And I think if the on-track competition is close enough, is good enough, is inspiring enough, then that fan that is sitting there that has never been to a race before, watching the modifieds at Stafford, and I keep using Stafford as an example, but it's just the one that pops into the top of my mind. But if they're sitting there watching it on their TV screen, on their computer screen, and they're inspired to go to Stafford now, then that's a win.
That's a good thing.
But
it is.
You know, when you look at the model, the model versus the Cup side of what you see on TV, or the F1, IndyCar, NHRA.
You can't compare it to that. And the reason I say that is the dollars, the television dollars that get poured into the sport. We're talking about a totally different... We're talking about a totally different level.
Exactly.
It could cost the tracks money at the gate.
Yep.
And at that point, everything, all bets are off, because now the arena that we're trying to play hockey in here is in jeopardy. And
exactly.
You can't have that. So either a blackout circle, something like that would work.
Can you not argue, though, that social media is doing the exact same thing?
Yeah, it's not. It's not. Yes, you can read or you can see a quick clip.
You can see photos.
You're not seeing the race.
I mean, today, in today's world.
Try and sit and watch a Facebook, somebody
it's
that.
It's just frustrating.
Well, it is. It is. You can't see. You can't hear.
Exactly.
You're missing all the information. And I always say, and I look back at it, when you're sitting and watching a lower quality production than what you're used to watching a cup race in, where you've got, I don't know, 30 different camera angles, and you've got telemetry, and you've got all this other stuff. When you watch a broadcast that isn't all of that, and you're not a fan, we're trying to create fans,
yeah,
they're not going to be interested in it.
Yeah,
you know, we are, because we're fans. There's a lot of stuff that we're seeing that we don't need someone to force feed us because we know what we're looking at. To the person that doesn't know what they're looking at, you're not going to win them over.
Yeah.
So it's a catch-22. I kind of think I'm torn. I do believe that live radio is the way to go. I've been saying it. I believe in it.
And I do as well.
And live radio, even when there's television, you still have live radio because there's not everybody can sit down and watch the race.
Exactly.
You got to be able to listen to it. And that's the way, like, I don't know. The first Daytona 500 that was live on network television, when was that? 1979.
Yeah.
And the story I got from the promoters' workshops back in the day was when Big Bill said it can go live, when my grandstand is full, it can go live. And I believe, and I don't know if this is verbatim true, but I believe it was CBS that put the first Daytona 500 on, and there were seats left, and they bought them to make sure that they could do the race live on television. That was the story I got from the promoters' workshops, and that's the way they made it work.
Exactly. And you know, the...
But the tickets had to be sold for it to go live.
Correct. And, you know, when you look at...
I think the model's still the same today.
I echo that. I just think that in today's market, you know, you look at a big event that happens here in Ontario. If I'm not there, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook, I'm checking it out. If it's not on RTR, you know.
Right.
If it's a big event that doesn't have the coverage, there's usually a replay. Somebody's got a cell phone up and they catch the big wreck that happens. They catch the big finish that happens. And you see it. And then immediately it's gone out of your mind.
Right.
At least in this case, you can sit back. If you want to watch, you want to have a couple beers, you want to watch the K&N race from California and you're sitting in Maine.
I think it's a great idea to grow the sport outside that ring, as long as it doesn't hurt the track. You know what? We got to hit a break. And then... on the other side of the break, we're going to talk about a brand new speedway coming into Ontario, and Anthony Leake is going to get us all up to date. Stay with us, everybody.
Hey, race fans, this is James Hinchcliffe, and you are listening to Racetime Radio.
From coast to coast, you're listening to Canada Talks.
The NFL is on SiriusXM. Listen to every game from the preseason through Super Bowl 53 on your radio.
Here we go. Tackle football. Let's play.
And remember, your hometown broadcast is always available on the SiriusXM app. When you're at home, turn down the TV volume and stream the game on your phone and SiriusXM connected devices and speakers. And when your team isn't playing, follow the National Football League 24/7 on SiriusXM NFL Radio, Channel 88.
Racetime Radio is fueled by BP Race Fuels, the worldwide leader in race fuel technology. Dawson Dental Centers. Get your victory lane smile at DawsonDental.ca.
Here's what you missed on NHL Game Day.
Scotty Bowman joins us. When you were coaching a team, was it important to kind of move a piece out, move a piece in, just to kind of keep it fresh, to bring in guys who hadn't won before?
I think winning a championship, it's very difficult to make changes. It'd be always good if you could add a piece or two without disturbing the chemistry of the team, which was not easy.
NHL Game Day on Sirius XM NHL Network Radio. Sirius XM 91.
Alexa, play NASCAR Radio on Sirius XM.
Sirius XM NASCAR Radio from Sirius XM.
Start your engine!
Gain access to NASCAR's biggest names.
Martin Truex Jr.
Kyle Busch.
Chase Elliott.
Hear live coverage of every single race.
Side by side for the win!
Wow. It's unfiltered 24/7 NASCAR.
Welcome to Victory Lane.
We've got breaking news. Let's go to the hotline.
This is Sirius XM NASCAR Radio, Channel 90. Listen on the app or at home on devices equipped with Amazon Alexa. Learn more at SiriusXM.com/NASCAR.
Racetime Radio.
Only on Sirius.
XM 167.
We get you closer.
Race Time Radio is brought to you by the Quality Inn Halifax Airport, the official stay of the Race Time Radio broadcast crew. Also by APX Racewear, the motorsports leader in custom crew apparel and fire suits. Also by the Wooden Door Bistro.
And we're back.
With more Race Time Radio.
And we are back with you. Yeah, it's a 10th Avenue freeze outside right now. I can guarantee you winter has returned. We had a nice little warm spell here in Ontario, at least this part of Ontario. It was kind of nice here for a day or so. Get that spring feeling happening, and then all of a sudden things turned, and Old Man Winter is back. But what do you say we talk about some stuff that's going to happen that's super exciting? We got a new racetrack coming into Kenora, Ontario. So fans up in northern Ontario are going to get excited about this. And to talk more about it, we got a guy that is going to be able to fill in all those blanks. His name, Anthony Leek. He's with us. Anthony, how you doing, bud? Man, we haven't talked to you in a long time.
It's been a while, definitely.
Sure has. You were with Emo Speedway. Are you still with Emo, or is that's pretty far in between, isn't it, Kenora and Emo?
It's about 180 kilometers from Emo to Kenora. In fact, it's almost exactly straight north from Emo for where Kenora is. We're about 45 minutes from the Manitoba border, so we're pretty far away from pretty much southern Ontario and really the rest of Ontario, for that matter. We're about 5 hours west of Thunder Bay for a drive. And I was with Emo until 2014 for the most part, and I've been up in Kenora since October of 2014, so it's just over four years now.
Pretty cool, man. You've done a lot in this sport, done a lot of good, too. It sounds like that's going to continue in Kenora. Tell us about the new racetrack. You guys got a couple of events in, I believe Carl was telling me, but the official launch is actually coming this year.
Yeah, so we had basically what happened was that my wife got a job up in Kenora, and I said, well, I can't live in a town that doesn't have a racetrack. So what I started to do was looking for a flat piece of property. Kenora's mostly rock on the northern part of Lake of the Woods, and so it took some time to find a place and worked out a partnership with the property owner who had had it for a while and really hadn't done much with it in the last 15 or 16 years. And that owner actually helped build a track here in Kenora in 1969, which lasted for about a year, right across the road from where the current one is now. And so basically I worked with the Kenora Hospitality Alliance locally here, which is an alliance of all the hotels that are in the city here. And I worked with a local contractor and basically was able to build the racetrack in about 2 years' time. We had to blast rock. Even as flat as the property was, we still had to blast rock. In 2017, October 2017, we hosted a practice. We actually put the last 300 feet of clay on the track the day before, and we had about 18 race cars come out from Winnipeg area, and a couple of people had already bought cars locally, and we had like 300 or 400 people show up. And this past year, we worked our butts off to try to get in an event. We originally were aiming for June 21st, and it ended up being August 5th. And it was a huge success, considering the fact that it was pretty much the only day it rained over the 60 days from the 1st of July until the very end of August. We had about 1,000 people showed up, and we had 2-hour rain delay, and it poured rain, and no one really left. So it was just great to see that kind of support so early on.
Man, that's good news, right? You got fans in the area transplanted, ready to go. They want to see some dirt action. Where did you guys get the clay from?
Funny story, you know, I basically just went and asked people, and I ended up getting a message actually while I was in Manitoba for a visit with someone else, and said, are you still interested in clay? And it is hard to find clay in Kenora here, mostly because it is rock and sand, lots of loam. And clay loam is the most common type of clay here, which tends to be fairly sandy. But about a 28-minute round trip per load just west of the racetrack is where we found it. It was an old gravel / sand pit, and they moved all the clay to the banks. And so basically we were able to snag that. And we put about 14 inches of clay on it, and it was about 400 dump truck loads. So you can imagine 28 minutes per dump truck round trip. That's quite a bit of loads, quite a few loads. And at one point, I think we had five dump trucks running, and we did it over a period of about five Saturdays and a couple weekdays, so about 7 or 8 days worth of hauling. But it's good stuff. I mean, we did a test on it. It's about 60% clay, and then a little bit of sand and a bit of loam to it as well. But it's got a high plasticity to it, so it's quite malleable in terms of when it absorbs the moisture, it actually has a fair amount of grip to it.
Ah, you got to love it. When it comes together, there's a lot of engineering that goes into a dirt track. A lot of fans don't realize it. The amount of work it takes to get that track prepared and to make it conducive to good racing, it takes that work, and it takes more than one person, right?
Absolutely. You know, between Moncrief Construction and KHA and a bunch of individuals, it all kind of slowly came together. The blasting company was very great with us. You know, we didn't really, you know, we basically have done this on a shoestring budget, but the blasting was a big out-of-pocket cost, and so the local mill warehouser helped support that. KHA also helped pay for that as well, and the company was very good at giving us the time to be able to pay it back over a fair amount of time. You know, we only had so much material, even after blasting the rock and digging a hole on the south side of the property. And, you know, I got about 7 degrees of banking in because I knew I only had so much material. I know a lot of people around this region loves their high banks, but, you know, it's nice to have something different. But at the same time, you only have so much material. And I mean, the banking, you know, by the time you get from the bottom of the track to the top of the track, you're looking at maybe a couple feet on the inside of raising the track up. But your backside is going to be, you know, anywhere from 12 to 14 feet. So when you make a racetrack that's 70 feet wide and, you know, 1,300 feet long, that's about 600 meters long, you know, it takes a ton of material. I think by the time we put it all together, I think it was 28,000 yards worth of material to build that race. Just the racetrack itself is almost 28,000 yards.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it's about 1,800 dump truck loads.
Isn't that? Man, oh, man, a lot goes into it. And the cool part is you've got, like mentioned there, Emo Speedway. Let's call it up the road, because when you're that far north, that is literally up the road. Yeah, 180K,
yeah.
But it isn't really that far. How far is Red River Co-op Speedway from you?
It's slightly more. It's about 2:15 or so, but you're about 2 hours and 20 minutes or so. Depending on where you live in the city, too, for the race car drivers, it can be closer or further away. You know, we have some drivers that are in Richer, which is only about 150 kilometers west of here. So, you know, some of them would like to come to Kenora, so because it's 45 minutes for them to go to Winnipeg, or it's an hour and a half to come to Kenora. So they're kind of in that sweet spot there in terms of distance. And then, you know, people who are on the east side of the city might be 2 hours. So you're definitely right in terms of it's kind of nestled in between two racetracks that are a couple hours away. So, and we're running on a night that neither of those tracks run. Winnipeg runs Thursday. We're going to aim for Fridays and then Emo Saturday. So if someone really wants to do the tour type thing, they can actually do, let's say they're in Winnipeg, they do their home track Thursday, come to Kenora Friday, go to Emo Saturday, and then they can drive 3 hours west to Morden to race there on Sunday afternoons, and then back to Winnipeg 2 hours away from Morden. So actually you can do about 4 days of racing and only about 9 hours worth of driving, which is actually pretty decent.
Absolutely. In the dirt world, that's close. It's a hop, skip, and a jump, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anthony, looking at you know, starting a new racetrack in Canada, and obviously that is not a statement that's said very often here in Canada. Awesome kudos to you guys, and high five getting it off the ground and getting it rolling. What's it like getting everything fired up and getting divisions started and all of that aspect? Like, obviously, when you look at most of the racetracks across Canada, these tracks have been there for a long time. They've been there for, you know, 15, 20 years or longer, much longer. What's it like getting everything off the ground and fired up on, you know, building the division side?
Right. So for me, it's really important to try to have a minimum amount of classes. You know, a lot of these tracks have 5 or 6 classes. So as a result, it can cause problems in terms of scheduling and so on. And I think that just over time, a lot of tracks have added more to try to, you know, increase participation and so on. But one of the things that I kind of learned from Emo, and I had heard from people regionally throughout the state saying that, you know, it's nice to have 3 classes because you can focus on building them. And so what I wanted to do was kind of copy something similar to Emo in terms of how to maximize, you know, your driver count with the least amount of classes. And, you know, for somewhere like Emo, which has had, you know, a downturn with mining and all that kind of stuff, and there's only about 7,000-8,000 people between Fort Frances and Rainy River, which is 100-kilometer distance, you know, compared to Kenora, which is 15,500 year-round and up to 40,000 during the summer months because it's a big tourist area. There was a few things that I really wanted to focus on. One, affordability. So affordability generally is entry level. So I wanted to bring in the four cylinders first and foremost, mainly because they're slower class, but people who are, you know, 14, 15, 16, 17 want to get into the sport without spending a pile of their parents' money possibly, or not having to work their butts off in order to be able to cover for it. I thought that that was super important. And then I thought, you know what, there are lots of older people who don't have, you know, all the money in the world either. And so I thought the pure stocks would be a good V8 type of class that Winnipeg's running as well, because Winnipeg also runs the four cylinders. So I wanted to see, okay, that's an affordable class to bring in if people don't want to run four cylinders, they want to run a V8. And so the last class, the Midwest, Wissota Midwest Modified, there's a ton of them in Emo. There's 30 of them that race almost regular in Winnipeg, and I thought to myself, you know what, like, that's the touring class, they travel the most, so that could be our class that we could bring that's both more affordable but more expensive and faster at the same time. So that's where I focused on. And, you know, because you're a new track and you don't have a lot of drivers here locally, you got to draw from the other tracks. So I wanted to make sure that I could tie into Winnipeg's car count, or drivers that would be willing to travel at least to start the first few years, so I could have a car count, but also at the same time make sure that it's a good entry-level class so that people locally can feel they can get a leg up into the sport and hopefully stick around for a long period of time.
What's the input been like and the reception, if you will, from places like Red River Co-op Speedway and Emo? Have they been welcoming? How you doing, Kenora? Welcome aboard, and let's work together.
Absolutely. I think overall it's been, I still do the videotaping or the filming of the races in Emo, and you know, we've had a few people from Emo come and race, and I know that as we get more established, I want to work especially more with Emo. Red River Co-op Speedway has been phenomenal so far. We're working together on a few cool things that we want to do this summer. You know, I try to pay attention in terms of scheduling so we minimize any conflicts and so on. And it's just, I feel that's due diligence on my part of the new track. You know, Red River Co-op and Emo are established facilities. Emo's 65 years this year since their first opening. Winnipeg's been around for 45 years or so. So it's important for me as a new track to work in tandem with what's already established as best as possible without overstepping any bounds. And I think that's been really helpful in terms of keeping that connection, that communication between what everybody's doing. And I think it turns out to be a positive for drivers and fans alike.
Absolutely. Agreed wholeheartedly. More cars, more fans, more emphasis just makes racing better all the way around. And it sounds like they got the right guy flying the ship. Definitely at Kenora. Hey, have you seen Mike Balkin yet? Has he showed his head yet? He probably want to win the first championship when it comes up.
Yeah, you know what? He came down to the late model show I did in 2013 in Emo, and him and I have had a pretty good friendship, actually. And I know that Ricky Weiss as well, who's been doing phenomenally down in the United States, he bugged me every once in a while when the first late model show is going to be in Kenora. I said, well, it might be another year or two, but eventually we'll get it to happen. And yeah. I think fans both, I think, in this region are going to be really excited when we do our first late model show. And I'm really hoping that the success of what we've seen so far in Kenora will help lead to putting on a nice big show like that. And so far we're going to run a Wissota Modified special on August 5th. We want to do it last year. It just didn't work out. Hoping to do it this year. And I mean, they're high flying as well. And I think they're a lot of fun to watch. And I'm hoping that we'll have a good crowd for that. But, it's really a matter of just taking your time and slowly building the facility, doing it the way you want to do it. Even with the limited funds and bringing new people in, I think we've gone from zero cars locally in our three classes to, I think this year we'll have at least 10 to 12 cars that are locally in the Kenora area. So when you combine that with the people from the region coming to help support the track, you start building the local people. I think it's just going to benefit all the racetracks at the end of the day.
Yeah, hey, Rome wasn't built in a day, right? Yeah, you got to set goals. You got to hit the targets. You got to do all those things. And by the way, at the end of the day, if the racetrack doesn't make any money, chances are the racetrack isn't going to become a parking lot or something that's got a lot of clay on it. So it all has to work in tandem. Everybody's got to pull on that rope. Sounds like you guys have got a great start. How is the schedule for 2019? Where do fans find out more about Kenora?
We're hoping that we're going to have to delay a little bit this spring again because we still have more construction work to do to finalize pit parking and all that. But we're going to have a practice on May 11th and the week after and take a couple weeks off and then a couple more weeks of practice because we have a lot of new drivers. So, of course, seat time is super important. I want to make sure we have a quality, high-quality program. And so, as a result, I want to make sure that all these new drivers get some good seat time. And then we're hoping to start on the third week of June. I think that's the 22nd. I think that's the date, whatever that Friday is. Might be the 20th. And then we're going to run every week up until towards the end of July. And our big special will be on a Sunday and on the August long weekend. And if people want to find out more, they can head to lakeofthewoodspeedway.com or check out our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/LOW Speedway.
Gotta love it. Anthony, awesome job. Great on you guys for putting it together. We're going to get you back on this program for updates occasionally and get everybody up to speed. I know there's a lot of people from across this country that will go right through Kenora on their way out west. I did it just a couple of years ago. Kenora is a beautiful area. I could just imagine stopping there for the night and taking in a night of racing would sort of fit the bill right on the money, man.
Absolutely.
You bet. Anthony, thanks so much for this.
No worries.
You bet. Anthony Leake, brand new Speedway coming in Ontario. That's cool news. I got to say, Clinton Jeffrey listens to the show. Clint, do me a favor. Go out there and grab a can of clay from the Big O. Send it up to those guys. Dave, maybe you over there at Humberstone, take a little can, throw it up. Welcome these guys into the fold as dirt race tracks here in Canada and send a little piece of some history, some luck, all of the above. Send it up. If you're a dirt track, send them guys a little bit of clay and they'll be the only track in Canada that's got a piece of everybody at it. What a thing. That would be cool.
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely pretty cool. And such a cool story, you know, a new racetrack in Canada.
Well, we got to thank Carl, too, for turning us on to it.
100%.
Yeah, you want to believe it. Carl, good job, man.
Yeah, that's definitely cool. You know, looking back on it, there's only been a couple of racetracks built in the last couple of years here.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, a lot of people point at Jukasa. That's not a new racetrack, right? That's Cayuga. It's
brand new
everything now. Yeah. But same thing can be said about Sunset, you know, rebuilt. But,
right.
You know, you hear about racetracks going away, not coming in.
Yeah.
And that's definitely a good sign, a really cool market. Obviously, you know, they got three tracks. They've got a perfect amount of racetracks in their little vicinity, and just looking forward to seeing what they can put together up there.
Absolutely. We're going to hit this break. On the other side, we are going to grab Greg McPherson from Inside Track Motorsport News and Motorama. We'll get you up to speed on the big show that's coming up. Stay with us.
Any way you want it, that's the way you need it.
Hey race fans, this is driver George Wilson, number 77. You're listening to Racetime Radio. Racetime Radio. We'll be back in just a minute.
To sing, she does everything.
You're listening to Canada Talks on Sirius XM, channel 167.
Discover a place where the sun and the tunes are shining bright.
This is Jimmy Buffett, and whether I'm traveling by land, by sea, or by air, Radio Margaritaville is my soundtrack.
Immerse yourself in a mix of Jimmy's favorite island music, commercial-free rock, reggae, folk, and live concerts to transport you to an instant warm weather vacation.
It's Radio Margaritaville.
Channel 24 and on the Sirius XM app.
If you're a Springsteen fan, you just found the promised land. Hear rare interviews and performances. Live concerts.
Is there anybody alive out there?
Celebrity guest DJs.
This is Rob Lowe.
Hey, baby, it's Little Steven here.
And more exclusives when listening to Bruce Springsteen's channel.
Welcome, Bruce Springsteen, to E Street Radio, your home away from home.
Great to meet you.
E Street Radio, Sirius XM, Channel 20.
Alexa, play NASCAR Radio on Sirius XM.
Sirius XM NASCAR Radio from Sirius XM.
Start your engine!
Gain access to NASCAR's biggest names.
Martin Truex Jr.
Kyle Busch.
Chase Elliott.
Hear live coverage of every single race.
They're side by side for the win.
Wow. It's unfiltered 24/7 NASCAR.
Welcome to Victory Lane.
We've got breaking news. Let's go to the hotline.
This is SiriusXM NASCAR Radio, Channel 90. Listen on the app or at home on devices equipped with Amazon Alexa. Learn more at SiriusXM.com/NASCAR.
Taking you all the way to the track
and back.
It's Race Time Radio.
SiriusXM 167.
Now, here's Joe.
And there we go. We are back with you tonight on Racetime Radio, SiriusXM Channel 167. So glad you could tune in. Junior, this is the time of the year where absolutely every race fan in the province of Ontario and right across the country starts getting excited to go out and see their short track and to go out and see some muscle cars. Our next guest is a guy that has got the show for you to attend, Motorama at the International Center, March 8th, 9th, and 10th, is right on the doorstep, and we got Greg McPherson with us live. How you doing there, Gregory? How's it going? Do I got you, Greg? Okay, let's try this again. I'm going to hit that button there. Greg, have we got you?
Yes, but I can hear you in the background as well.
You can hear me in the background.
Just one second.
Yeah, turn your radio down.
That's better. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. How you doing, bud?
Excellent, guys. Thank you so much for having me on.
Hey, this is the time of the year, man. I got goosebumps just talking about this. We got Motorama. It's just about here, and I know the planning has been you guys have been burning the candle at both ends. You got quite a show coming at us this year.
Yeah, so we're March 8, 9, 10 at the International Center, and like honestly, it's from about Christmas on, it's just that's it. We're a small staff, and it's all hands on deck, and lots of things to do, and lots of fires. You can only put so many out, but, you know, it's a labor of love. It's going pretty well.
This show has to do with absolutely everything automotive, really. It's not just a racing show. It's not just a street rod show. It's not a drag race show. It's absolutely everything, and that's the cool part about Motorama. At the International Center, Greg, is it like the full whack of the buildings this year? What do we got laid out?
Yeah, so we've added. We're up to over 350,000 square feet. We're adding a room this year called Mayhem in Hall 3, which is kind of like a rockabilly-themed room and like rat rods and things, the guys who put on the Jalopy Jam up. So we're actually bringing in some bands, some rockabilly bands, one from L.A. and another couple from the area, and doing a pin-up pageant. So anyway, like you say, it's just all things automotive. So it's cars of all types. You know, still have the tuner room called Spring Fever. But then the thing that's really close to our hearts is the racing side of things, because that's where we came from with the magazine. And I've been going to this show since, I guess, about 1990. And, you know, the racing kind of at that point was getting smaller and smaller. And so when we had the opportunity and the honor to put on the big combined show at the International Center that's been going on for so long, a main thing is just to make sure that racing stays strong and it's prominent, and it's a real showcase for motorsports in this area.
Absolutely, and good on you guys for keeping the tradition alive and keeping it growing. That's key for absolutely everybody. Always predominant at the show is the stage. All kinds of announcements coming out from speedways and sanctioning bodies. Can you tip your hand to what we can sort of expect, or who have you got on the docket to make some big, big announcements coming up at Motorama this year?
Yeah, so I understand there might be something in the works with one of the racing series, and a team going to make an announcement there, which can be pretty neat. But the one thing is, it's just so social. Like everybody, you know, they might not have seen each other since banquets in the fall, and now they've been working on cars, and it really is the place where they all come together. Everyone shows off their new stuff. They hand out their schedules. They see old friends. One neat thing is Quaker State is the official motor oil this year for the show, and they're going to do a nice thing with Gary Elliott, featuring their long-running relationship with Gary. So I know you guys know him really well.
Absolutely.
That's going to be neat. And then the one of the most amazing things about the show, on the Saturday night, we do a thing called the Short Track and Drag Racing Night of Champions. So for for either discipline, if you won a season-long points championship at a, either like at a class at your local track or at a touring series, and you register, you get to be honored on track that night in front of, and if you've seen the pictures, it's just thousands of people. So fans, families, teams, sponsors, everybody's there, and I think we're coming up on 100 short track champions from various tracks and series and levels, and about 40-something drag racing champions. So that is I don't think that happens anywhere else, and that's always a really neat thing that happens on the Saturday night of the show.
Absolutely. That is cool. And what a way to celebrate your championship one last time before really the snow takes off and the race cars come back out and the hunt is on for another title. Great way to celebrate it with other champions and in front of the Toronto audience. Good on you guys. That sounds like a lot of fun, and you got to know that champions are excited.
So, yeah, we've had, from the dirt side, Greg Callanan co-hosting with Adam Ross, who's they just do a fantastic job, and it could be, the junior dragster kid from some track, I saw the other day that the J.R. Fitzpatrick registered for his APC championship. So, you get the full gamut of people coming out, and it's just neat.
Yeah, and J.R. will be supporting that tan, right? Just gets back from St. Lucia, I believe, part of the APC Tour, and winning that championship. He and his wife go down and spend a week with APC down on the beach. He'll have a tan in the whole shot.
Yes. Maybe, I don't know if it'll fade in the next couple of weeks, but good on him. He works very hard, so that's great.
He sure does. He'll still have a smile on his face, and you got to know JR is going to be going after a second title here. It's going to be exciting to hear his comments.
Yeah, no, fantastic. Great kid.
Good stuff, Greg.
It's like, it reminds me of Joe Jr. there, watching these guys when they were either in a junior late model or, just tiny little cars, and now they're big grown men winning championships.
I know. I always
got great careers in racing.
I always throw darts at him, Greg. Don't let it shy. I beat JR in his first race. I make sure to tell him that every time.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and the bigger these kids get, the older we get.
Hey,
I can say that.
Was that a fat joke? That was a fat joke.
No, that was a high joke.
You said the bigger.
Oh, okay.
Not
well,
the
we
taller.
Can go with that
you
too.
Said the bigger.
The bigger you get.
That was a fat joke, Greg. I heard it. Greg, looking at Motorama, obviously, it's got a special place in my heart. I've been going to that show since it was the Performance World show back in the day. What is your favorite moment? Obviously, it's putting you on the spot, and everything is great with it, and you're a promoter all in all. But what is your favorite part of that show and kind of the history and legacy of the show?
Gosh, it's just, like you say, memories going back. So I remember working it, from 1990 on, and it's like seeing you guys with Sobel and All-Star. Don't want to repeat, but, the thing with the short track and the Drag Racing Night of Champions, that's really special. Like, to see little kids up there, those are the ones that get you. Just, being put on par with the biggest champions around, just such a highlight and honor for their families, and such a thrill. And then, otherwise, just, we're all trying to build racing and do what we can, and just kind of, you do so much work, but to have it turn into something where it's a showcase for the whole racing community to show up, look good, show off their cars, connect with new people, promote what they've got going on this season. That's always a neat thing to see. We love the racing, and it's like you guys, anything you can do to help, grow it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Then you do it right. And speaking of those young champions, it's kind of odd when you turn around and you happen to bump into that that young man, and all of a sudden that's the same kid that was on the stage just, 5-10 years ago as a junior dragster champion or a junior light model champion, and now they're climbing the ladder and away they go. It's kind of cool.
No, well, that's always neat. Like, it's always, makes you wince a little bit when you do the math and think about how long you've been doing this, but, it is neat to see, the generations kind of turn over. You used to watch the dad race, now it's the kid, and kid might be better, or it is neat to just, and they're all your friends too. You've just been hanging around with these families forever and watch them grow up, and it's not like politics gotcha stuff covering these guys. They're your buddies, and you want them to do well.
Absolutely. Too cool. Greg, the show, when did the doors spring open to the public, and how do fans find out more about Motorama?
Yeah, so our show takes place, starts on the Friday, March 8th. All 3 days of the weekend, we open at 10 a.m., and 10 to 9 Friday, 10 to 8 Saturday, and 10 to 5 on Sunday. Got lots of information on our website, which is motoramashow.com.
And fans can have a look there. You have daily releases at this time of the year. You got a lot of predominant people coming through. A lot of those TV shows that you watch, a lot of those stars are going to be out at Motorama,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So if you ever watch like Misfit Garage, the big guy Tom Smith.
Yeah.
He's a character, one of the, I guess, former Gas Monkey guys. Saw Lou Santiago from the Car Fix. There's a really nice lady, Bogie Leitner, from All Girls Garage. I met her a couple years ago at SEMA. She had this all-girl crew built this truck, and it was in the BASF booth at the show, alongside a car from Chip Foos and the Ring Brothers. So, anyway, another really nice lady. There's a fella down the road in Elmira, Grant Schwartz, who was on Vegas Rat Broads for 2 seasons, a Canadian guy, mm-hmm. and also a really nice guy, so... Yeah, so that's part of it. So it'll be busy in the stage and the autograph booths, and these guys all kind of just circulate around the show because they love cars and racing themselves. So if they don't have to be somewhere at some point, whether it's on stage or in an autograph booth, a lot of times they're just wandering around chatting with people and meeting car owners and talking about vehicles and things like that.
Yeah, you know what's really wild, Greg? Just the other night, flicking around the TV channels, Junior and I and Susie sitting there, we stumble across Storage Wars, and who do I see on there but Barry Weiss. Barry Weiss, I met him at Performance World, I'm talking a long time ago, and Barry Weiss then looks the same as he does today, and he's still got the same car that was in Performance World. He's still got that car today out there. I seen it in the show.
Wow, I love that. He's a character.
Yeah, is he ever. Man, oh man, great stuff. Those are the kind of people you can meet at Motorama. It all gets underway March 8th, 9th, and 10th. You want to be there. It's going to be a dynamite one again this year by the sounds of it. Greg, thanks so much for your time tonight on Race Time. We sure appreciate
it. Thank you, guys.
Hey, when's the next issue of Inside Track coming out?
Oh, finishing it tomorrow. So in the midst of the magazine, they've got a great assistant editor, or he's almost taken over now, James Nielsen. And so while a bunch of us have abandoned him for show prep, he's got a magazine together, so that's going to be great. A lot of stuff from down south.
Yeah, you got to love it. And Dave Frank's probably going to be popping into one of these issues soon. How about that going into the Canadian Motorsports Hall of Fame? That's cool.
Yeah, I had the opportunity to attend that dinner that night. So to see all those guys that we all know be honored like that, it was just really nice. It's, you know, Dave especially, well, not especially, but they all do, but Dave just puts his heart into it for years and years. He's come see me every Monday to make sure that the pictures, I get them from the racetrack on the weekend so that the racers and the sponsors and the tracks get exposure. And it was like a mission for him to make sure that happened.
Yeah, absolutely. What a guy. He's one of those Canadian treasures, you can guarantee it. He, along with that Iron Man Gary Elliott, the Quaker State guy, you're going to be able to catch him at Motorama. Sounds like some big stuff coming out there, too. Can't wait to find out what that is, buddy.
Yeah, so glad you guys can attend. Look forward to it.
You want to believe it. We'll see you at Motorama. Greg, thanks so much.
Thank you, guys.
You bet. Greg McPherson. It sounds like they've got another show. It's so funny. My phone goes kabing, 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 one after the other. Whoops. Keeps going one after the other, and its new release is coming out from Motorama. Greg's always got something cooking. And the releases are coming out just about daily now.
Yeah, definitely. Lots of stuff happening, and really cool initiative that they have for the champions. Definitely, I don't have to tell you. If you're listening to this program, you're a racer, you like racing, you're a race fan, get on down to Toronto. Get over to the International Center. Come on over. I don't care if you're from Halifax. If you need your racing fix, you come on over. And also, if we're going down there, what I want to do is I want to go over to the 401 Mini Indy.
Yeah, and I want to go hit those carts again.
I want to hold a Racetime Radio race over there while we're down there. We should do that. We should do that.
Yeah.
A Racetime Radio themed race.
That's got some potential.
Over there. And I'll beat all yous. I'll beat everybody out there. I'll wreck you. I don't even care.
Oh, too fun.
I'll wreck you to win.
Let's have a listen now. We got just a little bit of time left, and I got to fit Kyle Busch in here. 52 wins in a truck. Here's what Kyle Busch had to say about his truck in the media center at Atlanta. Here he is.
Yeah, it was certainly a big deal for me, a big deal for our team. Rudy and these guys, they prepare some awesome trucks, as do Hillman and Marcus. So certainly it's a lot of fun to be able to come out here and race with my own team and to have Cessna as well as Toyota and TRD support, everybody that gets us to the track, and to be able to go chase after records, that's not what we're here to do. We're just here to go out there and compete and win and do what we can. And obviously everything that's tallied up over the years is getting us to this point. So, we just continue to strive to do our best. And today it was really, really good. Truck was awesome. It was flying out there. So felt really good and nice to be able to get it in the first start and to hopefully be able to go, 5 for 5 this year. That's what your ultimate goal is, but we'll see what all we can get done.
It's going to be interesting. Every time Kyle Busch straps into one of those trucks, you got to know he's going to be competitive. And did he have a fast truck at Atlanta? If you happen to have missed the race, somehow or another, you got to watch that race. It was a dandy. Kyle made a move coming off, I believe it was turn 4, and he made a charge, went from 6th to 1st, and to see him do that, I mean, he sliced and diced his way through, never touched a truck, and got right out to the lead. Here's what Kyle had to say about the speed of that truck. These are interesting comments. I think you'll really enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. We debrief and go over film and look at things all the time. And I don't know how many times last year we were in meetings, and I was just yelling at him about, let's go, or it's not that slow. You got to get up on top of the wheel and make it happen. And obviously we could kind of prove that here tonight. I mean, Harrison did a great job for one of his first starts at a mile and a half, especially at Atlanta. I mean, this place is not easy at all. And he ran a solid race. I mean, he was right there all day long. And a couple restarts got him messed up, I know, and he wasn't able to quite get the finish that he deserved there. But ultimately was happy to see Harrison run as good as he did. And Todd, we certainly got to work with him and continue to bring him up and get him filled in on what it takes to be fast at these places, because his career's on the line. You don't get very many chances at this, and I'm sure that we'll hopefully be able to get him going better. And he should have won 2 races last year, no question about it, but obviously it just didn't happen. But he's got to show up this year and make it happen.
Yeah, so if you've ever been wondering, why is Kyle Busch so fast? Is he got something? Yeah, he does. He's got talent, and he's loaded with it. He does have good equipment. Those guys eat, breathe, and sleep wins, as Kyle does. And I know a lot of the trucks teams do. Kyle's really good at it. It was interesting, Joe. I know you and I watched that race. It was interesting to see Harrison Burton at one point there, 9 to go. Caution came out. Then it went red for rain. Harrison Burton was 2nd. They were 1-2.
Yeah, 100%. And, I find it really interesting that he called Todd Gilliland out like that in the media center. But Kyle Busch, like you said, eats, sleeps, breathes, wins. That's the only thing that matters to KBM, is getting the checkered flag. And, that will put a fire under everyone that's on the 4 team. For Todd Gilliland.
Oh, yeah.
Guaranteed.
Yep.
The amount of fire that's going to put underneath Todd Gilliland is huge. It's definitely pressure, but sometimes pressure is needed. And, one thing I do want to point out is Brad Keselowski was, of course, announced that everything was good. So hats off to NASCAR. That's a cool process.
Yes.
The everything's legal. Brad Keselowski is the official winner of today's race. So we don't got to wait till Tuesday anymore,
yeah,
folks.
Gotta love it. Gotta love it. And if they find a car that's illegal, they are going to be bounced. The win's going to be taken away. They're going to get minimum show-up points. Congratulations, NASCAR. Great move. But I must tell you, that is all we can fit into 2 hours here tonight on Race Time. We sure do appreciate you guys tuning in and ladies tuning in. We really do. Our guests, got to thank all of our guests tonight. Kenny Wallace, Anthony Leak, Greg McPherson. Great hearing from Kyle Busch. Christopher Bell, we'll get to you. I know you're going to win another one. But that's going to do it for us here tonight. Got to thank Susie Q here in the Racetime Radio Studio for hooking us up. And, of course, thanks to everybody back in Toronto at SiriusXM. Have a good week, everybody. We will catch you next week right here on Racetime Radio. Have a safe one.
Thanks for listening to Racetime Radio. Visit us on the web at www.racetimeradio.com. Or leave a message on our 24-hour listener hotline, 1-888-5-RACETIME. That's 1-888-572-2384. We hope you'll join us again next time for more Racetime Radio.
Come on now, dig.
Exclusively on your home for the hardcore race fan.
Excellent, buddy, excellent.